You're listening to Me and Paranormal You with your host, Ryan Singer. It's more fun to believe.
Third year bonus. Welcome to the program. Isn't it exciting to be alive? I hope you feel excited to be alive. I'm very excited to be alive. Very excited to be alive. Very excited to be alive. I am very excited to be alive. What happened just now? I don't know. My name is Ryan Singer. Thank you for listening to the program. I'm excited that you're here. I hope you're excited to be here or wherever you are. What's been going on in the world of the paranormal in the last week and a half? We didn't do two episodes last week. I took the week off, but that's fine. Every once in a while, I took the week off from doing two episodes, I should say. Every once in a while, you just have to give yourself a day, Give yourself a day, You feel like the day is yours to be given, so you do that. So we did that. I don't know who we are. We is me. We got all kinds of different characters that like to pop in and out of this program from time to time. We'll see if any of them happen to show up tonight. I honestly have no idea who's going to show up tonight, if any of them. That's just me being honest. Something interesting I'd like to read you an excerpt from The Death of Forever by Daryl Rainey, if I may, from page 74. I prefer not to accept this explanation, as it suggests that the me image has no preferred status. And what we're talking about is, I guess I should backtrack here a little bit before. So you'll have some kind of idea. We're talking about the idea that language and the use of language and symbolic associations is the birthing of ego. And this is the interesting thing. I was thinking about this as I couldn't sleep. If in fact language and the symbolic associations we make with things and using language to build the world around us, because everything around us has been named and or labeled and therefore has become, something with specificity. It has its place. It has its function. We know what it is, right? Because now we have named it. And so this labeling of things, this language and these symbolic associations were the birth of the ego. And the idea, the identity of self. And when the ego birth happened, right? That's when we started to understand that we died. So with the birth of ego came the understanding of death. So the birth of ego, therefore, causes our death. But the interesting part about this is, you hear oftentimes people when discussing psychedelic therapy, ego death. You do hear, and I guess it happens in other ways too, but you hear a lot about the phrase ego death, and is it a good thing, and how many times do you have to go through ego death to finally be free of your ego? Is it even possible, et cetera, et cetera? What does it all mean, or is it just one of these popular catchphrases the last 5 years? Well, it's interesting that the birth of ego births the awareness of death, and therefore maybe our understanding of death, and maybe therefore giving us death. And the death of ego is the separation of self, or like the melting away of like our identity as being singular, and therefore maybe frees us from death as well, once we realize we become one with everything else. So the birth of ego causes death, and then the death of ego causes immortality in that way. Is this too big of a jump for you? Because it's all I've been able to think about all day. So, okay. So that's a little bit of the backstory here regarding about what I'm getting ready to read. And it is interesting because there's all these interesting similarities and correlations between language and different cultures that are not connected to one another. The example that Rainey uses is the different languages and the name of father. In cultures we know from history evolved separately, usually on different continents. Zulu is Baba. Hebrew is Abba. Maori is Papa, Chinese is Baba, Latin is Pater. And so it's all, and phonetically, they're all very, very similar. In all cases, he writes, we have two ah vowels separated by an easily pronounced consonant. This common root cannot be explained simply by saying that it is the easiest sound for a baby to articulate. Maybe you were thinking that. I was thinking the same thing as I read this. Otherwise, it could just as easily be applied to its mother as its father. Nor can we argue that the basic engram is encoded in the genes. Otherwise, there would be no exceptions, which there are. What we say on biological grounds is that most postnatal development of the brain may predispose the child to relate two easily formulated sounds to a common and intimate feature of its environment. The bias towards a preferred association between sound and symbol may be physically wired into the brain. This example shows that one of the root functions of all human language is to link sound to symbol. Language evolved, in part, as a labeling system in which common features of the environment came to be identified by specific sounds. An easily understood example from the English speech is buzz, since in this case the word sound acoustically mimics the thing it symbolizes in insects' wings in flight, for example, onomatopoeia, baby. And you know how much I love onomatopoeia and using the word onomatopoeia and then calling things onomatopoeic. Oh, you know I love that. And my dear friend out there, if you're listening, I'm going to try to squeeze one in. I'm going to try to squeeze a usage of that in. Yeah, and so you can message me and let me know how you're doing. You know who you are. So let's see here. I guess I'll just keep going here because this is pretty fascinating to me. Many researchers have tried to picture this process in terms of computers. This raises the question, how can the highest element in the system be quote-unquote aware of the lower elements? English brain researcher Susan Blackmore has proposed a radical solution to this problem. She suggests that all mental models are conscious. In her own words, quote, what am I who is to be conscious of all that activity? We can suggest an answer. I am only one of the models in the system, a model of self in the world, built largely by language. I am a self-image, a body image, a construct of a human image. This makes it perfectly obvious why all the rest of the system appears to be unconscious. It is unconscious to me, but not to itself. And to be clear here, I was in quotes. Me was in quotes. We're talking about the language of self-identifying as separate than or as a being who is, right? So, picking up now where I originally started reading. See, aren't you glad you had that context leading up to what I was about ready to read? Goodness gracious. I prefer not to accept this explanation. This is Daryl Rainey speaking as he writes. I prefer not to accept this explanation as it suggests that the me image has no preferred status. To me, self-consciousness does not arise automatically when the brain learns to construct its own identity tag. A dog will respond when its name is called, i.e. it can recognize its own identity tag. The unique quality of human self-awareness is the brain's ability to, quote, see itself in the act of perception, to see itself as the seer. Only man can say, I know that I know. This suggests to me that the introduction of full-scale self-awareness restructured human psychology in ways that contemporary science cannot as yet formulate in terms of either psychological or neuropsychological models, or neurophysiological models, excuse me. I shall develop this idea into a more tightly focused theory shortly. He's saying that the me self-image was just another element in the brain's repertoire of linguistic symbols. Ooh, it's an organizing agency that caused the brain to restructure its memory programs in terms of a new integrative nexus. See, okay, so these are a lot of words that get sciencey. Sciencey, that's not even a word, probably to describe something that is advanced. Isn't that funny how we did that? I'm going to put this little bookmark back. So consider that for a moment. when you're trying to understand who you are and you're trying to understand what is this world we're living in, we do not even have an understanding of who we are, of what we are, let alone an understanding of all the other things that surround us, that interact with us, that are quite possibly a part of us. I'm kind of toying around with the idea that we may be the trickster. And while that might not ultimately be the case, what most assuredly, in my opinion, will prove itself in time is that the connection between us and the trickster, you know, the paranormal trickster, the phenomena that likes to mess with us a little bit, the phenomena that seems, it seems redundant, or it seems impossible, or it seems to be a paradox, we are a part of that. We are intertwined inside of it. And if the past can affect the future much in the way the future can affect the present and or the past, who is to say that we don't already have this understanding of who the trickster might be, of what paranormal phenomena actually is, even though we at this moment do not believe we do? I think this points to the fact that while this might be difficult to understand, difficult for me to even wrap my brain around, it does point to the fact that it's intertwined. We are intertwined with this phenomena. And some of us may be opening ourselves up to it more so than others may be opening themselves to it. But that doesn't mean that it is any less, quote-unquote, real to them than it is to us, whether they realize it or not. Oxygen is what we breathe. If I was never told that oxygen was what I breathe, I would only have the understanding that when my nose was plugged and my mouth was closed, I needed to open these things to feel my life, right? I don't know how I would describe it. This is actually interesting. I'm going to write this down. Oops. I'm using a new microphone as of today. My buddy Jim Perry recommended this microphone. I got this recommendation from Daniel Noah through Jim Perry. The Triangle Table, our first episode of all three of us being together. Maybe you heard that. Wow, did they even pick up this mic? I might have to be a little extra careful with some of my cursory noises now that I have this great microphone. Let's see here. Oh, what would air be called? What would you call it? If you were never told what it was, right? It is a fun little mental exercise to go through. It's like, you know, without it, you will have your life taken, meaning you must open yourself up to being alive, as opposed, maybe this is the great metaphor that unravels here, as we kind of talk about this off the top of our head with each other, that, you know, when we close ourselves off, we are committing to stagnation and to death, suffocation. And when we open ourselves up, we can feel more vibrant, we can feel more alive, and it can give us growth. Maybe this is very symbolic in many ways. When you take someone's breath away, or if you've had your breath taken away, it's a great turn of phrase. So let's think about this. We're all interconnected. We're all intertwined. Yet we don't know what we as individuals are necessarily. And what gave us this self-awareness, I've often mused that I think without any formal education or any real reason to think I have a better idea than anyone else who is living, I do love the idea of magic mushrooms, of psilocybin helping, you know, the stoned ape theory that Terence McKenna spoke about. I also love the idea that consciousness is a gift of advanced technology from an alien civilization. Through the nature of self-awareness, there's no way to know what the moment we became self-aware. You know, it's one of those things where it's, you become self-aware and now there's no way to know that you were previously unaware before being self-aware. you know, it's there's just no way to do that, right? Because you weren't self-aware. So how could you even know? So, but, you know, then the observation effect kicks in as soon as this happens. And is this all triggered by language and the symbolic associations of sound and meaning? And whew, that really, and I love language. I love what language can do. I love what language, I'm reading this book and I'm like, I should know 5 languages. Why am I not quadlingual? You know, or whatever 5 would be. I know that's 4, and I don't even think that's probably a word, but I mean, bilingual, trilingual, quadlingual, is that a thing? Anyway, I need to get back on Duolingo and start, you know, amping up my game here to help my brain grow. I was going to say help my bro grain. I don't think we need any more bro. We can just kind of get some more brain. That would be ideal. So thinking about this, thinking that we don't even know who we are, let alone who other people are, and we can't even define what it is that made us who we are now. Is it just a little too bold to lean into the idea that if modern science can't define something or prove something, that it must not be real, when in fact we don't even know who we are, who I am, who me could truly be, and how we came into existence from just being what previously the creatures with no self-awareness were being. God, I mean, is there a more fascinating question than the moment of enlightenment? And is it even enlightenment when self-awareness sparks for that very first time? Is there a more fascinating moment? And could there be a more intriguing set of events or curious players who participated in the making of such a thing? I'm not so sure. I'm not so sure there could be. So I think what we have to focus on now is trying to understand to the best of our ability what it even means to be, right? And what effect and what impact does that have on the idea of the paranormal, of the unknown, of the supernatural, the mystical, the strange? And is it possible that our consciousness, our visualizations of self and our understandings of self and energetic forms doesn't manifest in ways that we just have no idea about? Because there is something really fascinating about the psychokinetic connection between, you know, happenings and hauntings and the person's, you know, subconscious or deep in the brain and the mind of the people who are experiencing them. And it's been a few years now, and gosh, I can't even remember the name, and that's bad on me. I should have, well, I guess I didn't realize I'd be talking about this in advance, but she's been on the program at least once or twice and writing a book about this. And there is something really, really cool when you can think about the power of your mind in a way that it manifests itself through through psychokinesis in happenings or hauntings or, you know, some kind of activity in a house that you believe is haunted when it's only haunted by your mind, by the deep caverns of your own thinking and energetic prowess that happens on a subatomic level, I suppose, that can't be measured by modern science. Now, that doesn't mean that there can't be, I guess, more outside forces that maybe we are not directly connected to, at least in any real physical form, that are classifying, that could be classified as paranormal, because I do believe those things are real. I think it's like maybe this new microphone, but I feel like I'm hearing everything. I'm hearing my own heartbeat during this. I mean, this microphone must be very good, must pick up things. It must be very adept at doing such.
Hey, it's Jim Perry, host of Euphemet, a podcast about the unknown and our relationship to it. And I wanted to let you know that we begin a new season on Thursday, March 11th. New episodes every other week featuring real people sharing stories on how anomalous experiences have shaped their life. We can't wait to return on March 11th, but for now, please enjoy this sneak preview of an upcoming episode and keep looking up.
I always knew like things were different around me. When we started house shopping, that's when it started coming out the most. Still remember one of the first houses that we looked at. Pulled up, chain link fence in the front, nice, beautiful green grass. And I was in the back seat with my mom and my sister. And I look at the house and the first thing I see is on one of the walls, sitting in the chair so she would be facing the floor, is an old lady. So she was not on the ground. She was, her chair was on the wall when I saw her, kind of looking over and smiling, but it was the ugliest, most putrid smile ever. And that's the image that I got. It's not like I'm seeing you. It's almost like a quick, like a boom, like a flash, like bam, there's an image. And I was a little kid, you know? And as soon as that image hit me, I grabbed onto my mom. And my mom, she was always very in tune with me. She said, you know, what's the matter? And I said, hey, look, there's no lady in this house. I just saw her. She's in there. She's not nice. She's in that back room right there. I'm like, mom, I don't want to go in this house. And I started freaking out, started panicking. I thank God for my mom, because she said to my dad, she's like, hey, we're not going in this house. And he's like, well, why not? She's like, no, you know what? I don't really like it. And she made something up. And she told him later, you know, what I had told her. And my father was very, oh, man, he's old school and a drinker back then. And unfortunately, he was physically abusive towards me back then. And, you know, he went the typical, he needs to stop being such a pussy and blah, blah, blah. And right away, I was like, this is strange. This isn't right. Like, why? Why is this happening to me? We fast forward. My dad's talking to my mom, and he's got this look like disbelief. He's just like, what? Are you sure? Are you positive? And being the nosy little kid that I was, you know, I walk in, and he walks away from my mom, and I'm like, what's wrong with dad? You know, what's his deal? And Vera, the lady that was the realtor, told him that, yes, there was an elderly woman that lived there, and she passed away in the house. She passed away in one of the back rooms. And I right away was like, I knew it, you know? I was like, oh, I told you, you know? I had a victory, you know? It wasn't a good one, but I was just like, oh, yes. Fuck him. You know, I hope he's terrified. And he looked terrified, this man. He just looked like, I can't believe this shit, you know? Because my dad is very like, if I don't see it, I'm not going to believe it. You know, if it doesn't happen, if I didn't see it, didn't happen. And I'm like, that's an awful way to think.
On March 11th, we begin again. The critically acclaimed podcast Euphemet returns. Hear it on Spotify or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Are you hearing that? Anyway, so The Death of Forever, A New Future for Human Consciousness by Del Rainey, it's really cracking my brain open into a lot of different ideas and a lot of different things. And it's really, really fascinating me. I'd be curious if anyone has had experiences of meditation on self. And I think even Rainey even gets into this a little bit, but I think some of the coolest meditation experiences I've ever had, when it gets to be trippy or really just powerful or strange, right, is when I'm like totally disconnecting from self and I'm just kind of in the, I don't know, it's not primordial goo necessarily, but when I'm just part of the ether, you know, when I'm like on the, when I'm on the float, you know, when I'm on the mental float and I kind of dissipate into all the energy that is surrounding me. these are the moments where I have the most vivid imaginations and visualizations and feelings, deep, deep feelings that don't necessarily resonate in my body physically, but they resonate with me emotionally in such a way that is, it can't be encapsulated in physical form. And it's that separation from self. And sometimes I can get there and sometimes I can't, but the remarkable thing is when it happens very quickly, on those rare times where it happens very quickly, and it will be less rare in the future, I'm sure, the more I do it, but in those rare situations when it happens pretty fast, like almost instantly, it's jarring to a certain degree, almost as if, you know, you didn't eat mushrooms, almost as if they were injected into your bloodstream directly. It's like when kids were, you know, bonging beers or vodka up into their buttholes. Like, it's just a way to get a lot really drunk really fast. And I do not recommend doing that. No one should be doing that. It's quite dangerous, in fact. So, yeah, but it makes you wonder when it comes to where we're headed as a species, right? And in our understanding, and if there really is power in these symbols and sounds and the associations between the two. And by sounds, we mean just like saying the words. And I think we understand the power of words and the power of sound already on many different levels, whether it's a rousing speech or a moving song or someone simply saying our identity tag, our name, right? Which I guess would be a basic level. But I think what that speaks to, not to try to be punny, but what it speaks to is the idea that conversations matter and sounds are important. If, in fact, Blackmore is correct and language created and birthed ego and self-awareness, what does it mean when we're having all of these conversations about paranormal phenomena? And what does it mean when all of us are speaking it and are making those associations? What power do they have at that point? Is there a tipping point when it no longer becomes fringy at all? And I don't know, maybe you feel like we're already headed in that direction, because it surely seems so, does it not? That every TV show that you watch nowadays, or every trailer for a movie, there seems to be some kind of space, alien, spiritual, witchy, ghosty, paranormal aspect to it. It seems to be boiling to the top, right? We're no longer in fringe entertainment over here. This is, you know, we're rocketing to the mainstream, and it already is mainstream in many ways. These topics no longer evade people's, thoughts, at least. And maybe that's because I'm in the bubble that I feel this way. I'm definitely in the bubble, the paranormal bubble, in a large respect. So that's not to say that I'm not totally delusional about this. But it's something to consider. So maybe think about that. And think about the associations of I and me and what they mean to you. And furthermore, from that, I speak, it speaks, not I speak, but I guess if I am part of everything, I do speak. It speaks to the power of what we're thinking and what sounds and symbols and what associations we're making with those, and which ones are we repeating to ourselves over and over and over again. And I got to tell you, manifestation is like extremely powerful. And I've always been into the idea of manifesting. And I feel like, especially very recently, I have just been really kind of ratcheting up my gears in the manifestation game. And it is happening. It's the manifestation, it happens. If you throw your weight into it and behind it, the manifesting power that you wield is, it will blow your mind, and it's immense. And it seems laughable at times. It's going to, there's been times where I've been dancing in my room laughing almost as if like this moment of like, oh my God, I can't believe it's real, but simultaneously being like, I told you it was real this whole time, you dumb SOB, right? So it's like one of those things. And so I just can't implore you enough to try to get into it a little bit. And there's also something really cool that I discovered. It's called sigilengine.com. You can go on there, you can just type in an intention or something, and this website will create a sigil for you. And it's about how quickly you type or how slowly you type. And they're all going to be, due to the algorithm, it's all very, very unique sigils. And you could print them out if you'd like, or you can just look at them and use them that way, depending on what you're into. But I would recommend going there and, you know, just checking out. It's very cool. If nothing else, it's pretty cool to play around with. But you don't need that for manifestation and the power of the mind and the unknown. It's at your fingertips. And more than that, it's inside of your fingertips. It's what your fingertips are made from, in fact. So just try to remember that as you go about your day. And you know, it's been a long year since the pandemic started to really crack open everywhere. And it doesn't feel like it's been a year, but in some respects, it feels like it's been five. So I hope to be seeing you at shows soon. I hope to be getting vaccinated at some point in the next few months. I think hopefully all of us will be. That'd be great. And we can all be, back out at comedy shows, stand-up comedy shows. I know there's comedians already doing sold-out rooms. I'm just not in a place where I feel like I should be doing that. And, you know, one might say, well, could you sell out a room in the first place? Well, that's a very good question. I have sold out some shows before. You know, let's not get crazy and say that the majority of them have been, because they're not. But, you know, who knows? We'll see what happens in the future. Nonetheless, someday I will be back out there in your favorite weird coffee shop or, you know, rock club or crystal shop doing, or yoga studio doing comedy again, and also comedy club. So I hope to be doing that soon. I'm going to be moving out of my place here in a few weeks, and I'll be going back to Ohio for the launch of Crystallize for the app, and preparing for that, being around my three cousins who live in Cincinnati who started the company with me, and we're going to be doing that. So you can still get on the waiting list, crystallize.app/early access. You can get on the waiting list. The waiting list is growing. There's nearly 4,000 people on the waiting list right now. We're very, very excited. But if you get on there and you start sharing it, it's not too late to move up that waiting list to get free stuff. Also, we're doing a bounty program. If you take photos of your crystals that you have at home and you upload them, you can get, for every one photo you upload, you get one free week of premium features of the app once we're launched on the market. And, you know, depending on how many photos you upload of the different crystals that we need cell phone photos of, I think you could get over 5 years of free access just by uploading enough photos. We're giving away the house on this. So, you know, jump in over there. I mean, some photos are a lot more difficult to get than others. So here in the very near future, there will be weighted crystals also on the bounty program. So crystallize.app/crystal bounty is where you can do that. So you can go to crystallize.app and you can, you know, get on the waiting list and all that good stuff. You'd be helping us out tremendously. Share it with your friends, move up the list. The more love you give, the more love you get, kind of thing. So the more free stuff you get by sharing. So yeah, we're gonna close this one down as kind of a test for this new mic, but also wanted to share with you this idea of what creates consciousness. And is it the idea that we created language in such a way that it became, that we birthed the ego through such a thing? And it's fascinating to think about. And then you think about the evolution of such, and Kevin Kelly says evolution tends towards specialization. So the longer we've been self-aware, I guess the more specialized that self-awareness comes or can get. And so what does that mean for the future of self-awareness and consciousness? I mean, I guess I don't really know. I don't have the answer to that, but it is fascinating to try to meditate, get into that meditative state where you dissolve the ego, almost like an ego death and then maybe truly step into your immortality in that way. Maybe that's the secret. Because we do have immortal genes. And they're in the reproductive tissues, which is, I mean, and then every other cell in our body is kind of, it's a mortality structure as opposed to an immortality structure. And you think about the scientific angle, what some people would say led us towards being mortal was the idea that our physical body, our DNA realized that if it spent more energy on replicating us as much as humanly possible, as opposed to structuring our, having a cellular structure that makes us impervious to ever dying, that it was more efficient. And it's just like, oh my God, we're just all the puppets of the DNA. We're just all the puppets of the double helix pulling the strings. Isn't that fascinating? Well, I mean, there's a lot to think about. You know, I don't know if any of this made sense, but none of the characters showed up this. Maybe we're having to, maybe the conversation was flowing too much. I think the conversation was flowing very good, in fact. Oh, I think you came in there just because I said so. You just kind of, you were happy doing what you were doing over there, paranormal walk-in. And, you know, there's sometimes you don't even want to go, but you do because you had to. Yeah, I guess you're talking about taking a trip or using the bathroom. I'm not sure which, but either one works for me. So thank you, PW. Appreciate that. So yeah, Rising on Instagram. I'm also on Clubhouse at Ryan Singer. So you can find me. I'm going to start doing some Clubhouse chats probably soon. Thank you to the patrons, patreon.com/Ryan Singer. Videos of certain interviews go up there, usually the day before, the night before the interview is released. I try to get those out at least, at least a little bit early for people. I got my buddy Dan Lindholm joining me this Friday. Will be the interview where he talks openly about his connection to the investigation with Greg and Sue, which we've been following on this program through multiple interviews. So that'll be another update on that series. Exciting stuff. Really exciting stuff. Spring is coming. I hope that'll bring you optimism. I love the warmth, and I hope to see you soon at a comedy show later in the year. If not, I'll just keep seeing you at the watering hole on the astral plane.